Okay, so today we're going to tell you a little bit about the process of obviously creating a digital word list for Lockhit. So I'll just give you a little bit of an overview. So firstly, I'll tell you a little bit about why we decided to work on Lockhit. It's a language from South Sudan. Why we decided to make a digitised word list and what sort of things are included in that. The process of collecting the data and then working with the data to arrive at an archival form of the word list and then a presentation form of the word list. Then we'll address some general limitations of this sort of task and then, of course, tell you why we still think this approach is useful and then touch on some future directions for our work on Lockhit. So, working on Lockhit, this follows on from a project that was described by John and Simon last year, a project which aimed to investigate which Sudanese languages are spoken in Melbourne. So basically finding out who's here and what languages they speak. And we found out that there are at least 40 Sudanese languages spoken in Melbourne, many of them minority languages which are very, very underdescribed. And of those languages, Lockhit was identified as a good option for further documentation because there's a 5 or 6 families here in Melbourne who are very enthusiastic about working on their language. And it's also one of the very underdescribed languages from that part of South Sudan. For Lockhit, existing materials are pretty much limited to a couple of word lists. There's a sketch phonology slash orthography, which is actually quite recent. And really the whole language family in that region has received very little scholarly attention. So on the right here, you can see the Eastern Nilotic sort of family tree, Lockhit circled. Out of the 16 or so languages in that family, Maasai and Turkana are reasonably well described with pretty good grammars, and Bari and Latuko have also got grammars in some description, although they're quite old. Most of the other languages in that family have only got a few bits and pieces or no documentation at all. So Lockhit is a good starting point for exploring other languages in that area as well. Lockhit's also spoken in a very linguistically vulnerable area, so the decades of civil war between what's now South Sudan and Sudan resulted in millions of lives lost and also massive internal and external displacement of various ethnic groups. And although Lockhit is not a small language by Australian standards, certainly, I think there was a 1995 estimate that suggested about 50,000 speakers, although those sort of statistics are very unreliable, there's not really very recent information about that. So although it's sizable on paper, it's quite vulnerable because of the fragmentation of speaker populations and also the dominance of majority languages in the region. So even for a lot of minority languages, there's no schooling in the native language, there's no resources available in it. So the Lockhit, for example, generally are schooled in Latuko, which is the language of a major tribe nearby, and also various influences from other dominant languages from South Sudan. So why did we decide to do a digitised word list? Basically, we're following on from some similar models that have appeared in mostly in the Journal of Language Documentation and Conservation, which demonstrate best practices for preservation and accessibility of data, basically recreating existing audio, which was generally on cassette, and already existing word lists, which were usually handwritten or maybe typed up in Microsoft Word, in a digital form that kind of links everything together. So they produce a presentation form that's available and accessible in an archival form of the word list, and we wanted to apply this sort of process to the early stages of documentation. So when we don't already have the cassettes and the word list, we want to see if we can kind of apply this to early documentation. And we'll give you a bit more justification later as well. So the word list is based on a slightly modified 200-item Swadesh list, and for those of you who don't know what a Swadesh list is, they were developed as a standard set of basic words that are likely to occur in all languages, so basic terms like mother, tree, sun, mouth and bird, things like that are on the list. They're very widely used by linguists and other researchers, so data collected using these lists is very good for making comparisons between language varieties, and that was part of the impetus for developing these lists in the first place. It's also a really good starting point when there's not much other language data, because obviously you've got to start somewhere, and collecting very commonly used words is a very good place to start. So to start working on this word list, we had an initial meeting with the members of the Lockhit community group here in Melbourne to discuss possible outcomes of this task. So that meant telling them what our kinds of research aims were and what we want to get out of working on LOPIT, but it also meant listening to them and finding out what sorts of things they'd like to get out of the project. So they had some suggestions that included writing some LOPIT stories and making children's books out of them, developing some educational materials for the LOPIT children in Melbourne, because it's very important to them that they can teach their children their language, but there's no existing resources anywhere for the language. And also some other things like recording some traditional LOPIT songs and putting them on CD. So we're going to endeavour to help them with those aims alongside doing our own research as well. So this meeting went for about 4 hours, and we also did a bit of a test run working through some of the word list, and we got through about 70 items out of the 200 word list, all as a group together. And we'd heard that there were 6 different dialects of LOPIT, and as soon as we started kind of working all as a group, it was very apparent that there were lots of dialectal differences. At least 3 of those 6 dialects are represented by speakers here in Melbourne. And the differences were readily apparent in the vowel qualities, in the tones, in some lexical items, even amongst the pronouns. So that's why it took us 4 hours to just get through 70 items on the list. So from that point, we decided it was best to proceed with just one speaker at a time, just one-on-one. But we still have every intention of working with speakers of the other dialects, because we want to know about them, and it's very important to the community that all of the different dialects are represented in any materials that are developed. So one-on-one, we worked through the word list with the president of the LOPIT community group, we'll call him AL, and it took about 2 hours to get through the whole list, just working through it, and that process meant basically finding the appropriate LOPIT word for every item on the Swadesh list, if there is one, so going through using the English gloss, finding the most appropriate translation in LOPIT for it. Some things obviously don't translate very well, so there's no LOPIT word for snow, being in sub-Saharan Africa. Though living here in Melbourne, they have occasionally needed to refer to such a thing, so it translates as big hail in LOPIT. Working through the list also meant noting different options that came up. So gender marking is important in LOPIT. Even the numeral 1, there are 2 options, so we need to indicate that in the word list. Also means adding comments on meaning when they're given. So big can refer to size, age and rank. And throughout, every time the AL gave me the word, I'd be transcribing phonetically in my own handwritten notes. So then we've got that. We move on to doing a more formal recording using the data that we've already worked through. So the recording was done in the studio here at the University of Melbourne, recorded as a WAV file, 96 kHz, 24-bit sampling rates, so that it fits with archival recommendations. Basically, this involved me giving the English prompt and then the speaker giving me 3 repetitions of each LOPIT word. Very kind of straightforward. And so using this formal recording, we want to produce our archival and presentation form of the word list. So we used a piece of software called TableTrans to do the transcription and annotation of the audio. And the reason we chose TableTrans is because, 4 main reasons, you can align the transcriptions to the audio with timestamps. It has good Unicode support for the phonetic characters, which is very important because we were doing purely a phonetic transcription. It also can export all of the annotated segments, so every little word that you've marked out and transcribed as individual WAV files all at once, so you don't have to save every little chunk individually as a file, you just export them all out. And the textual data is stored in XML format. So that's why we use TableTrans, and the link's just there for anyone who wants to track it down. That's just a screenshot of what it looks like. So you can see the bit that's highlighted in yellow there refers to the Swadesh item number 178, and it correlates with the piece of the waveform down below. That's the bit that's linked in the transcribed segment. There's plenty of drawbacks to using TableTrans. It's pretty buggy because it's no longer being developed. An IPA transcription needs to be entered in another text editor first and then copied and pasted across, because there's no support for Keyman keyboards or insert symbol or whatever method you prefer to use for those sorts of things, which makes it a bit time-consuming, but it's still the best option for those 4 points that I mentioned on the previous slide, which is kind of surprising because we consider those things kind of basic needs for linguists, and it's a little bit surprising that we don't have other software that's better at all of those things. So the representation of the word list includes the item number for the Swadesh list item, the English gloss, any additional comments on meaning or anything like that, and then the phonetic transcription. And we'd like to emphasise that decisions about representation on the word list totally depend on what's known about the language. So Lapit phonology still needs to be worked out, and there's no orthography in use. Even though there was a sketch orthography developed in 2001, it hasn't been used or disseminated at all. So the type transcription in table trans was based on the handwritten notes and then updated while working with the audio based on whatever slight differences were heard re-listening to it. Transcriptions were made by one researcher in table trans and then checked by the other two, which turned out to be a slightly time-consuming process. There were some difficulties with the transcription, so marking tones is definitely problematic because phonological analysis needs to be done before the tone markings can be meaningful at all. So at the moment, we've just marked impressionistically high and low tones, but we definitely don't think it's limited to that, and that doesn't represent what our final analysis will be. And tone in Lapit also appears to be grammatical as well as lexical, so it can be used to indicate singular or plural marking, and it can also be used to indicate noun case, it seems. So there's no way of knowing that or reflecting that in the word list at this stage, so it's one difficulty there. The vowel qualities vary enormously, and there's going to be quite a bit of analysis required to find out which ones are contrastive and what their characteristics are. And fricatives were surprisingly difficult too, because, for example, what sounds in the recording like a bilabial fricative, so made just with the lips, is actually labiodental, but you can only see that when you're working with the speaker and you can see how he's articulating things. So we actually had a follow-up session with the speaker where we had our sort of finalised transcriptions and then went through and had a look at what he was doing again, and that's when we realised some of those differences. So we would recommend follow-up sessions even after you've finalised your transcription to check how it matches the articulation. So with all the materials that we've got now, so we've got the audio, we've got the typed word list, we can produce our archival form of the word list. So this is the full audio file, which is about 30 minutes long in WAV format at the high sampling rate. The textual data, which is in XML format with UTF-8 encoding for the Unicode characters. A separate file which has the metadata, also in XML format and following the OLAC standards for metadata. And we'll also include scanned copies of the original handwritten notes to go up there. So that can all be archived together, and it's got everything in there. And these things kind of aim for maximum quality, maximum longevity and compatibility by using open formats and uncompressed data to fit in with current best practice recommendations. So that's the aim of the archival form. But archival forms are not always particularly accessible, so the presentation form addresses the need of people to be able to actually see the data easily and come across it. So for the presentation form, we opted for web presentation. And what this involves instead is, because the individual transcribed words are linked to their relevant segments in the audio, we can arrange the web presentation form that if you want to click to hear a word, it just downloads each individual small WAV file that relates to that section. And the audio is also downsampled for that so that it's smaller downloads. And HTML presentation of the transcriptions. So the XML has been rendered in HTML with an XSLT script for human readability. The metadata as well is included in the presentation form. And some scanned copies of the handwritten initial transcription will be included there too in PDF and lower quality images. So the aim of this is ease of access and human readability, so that's why we've gone for smaller file sizes and different rendering of data. We also plan to do an open access print version at some point of the word list. So the different needs for the archival forms and for the presentation forms. And so I'll just quickly show you what the word list looks like if it loads for me. Okay, so pretty much just an item number, English gloss, phonetic transcription, and some extra comments where necessary, and audio for each word.
Yon. Ede. Iche. Nam.
And so on.
Hola.
So easily found on the web, easily navigable, and even though it's limited data, you can see it right there, and that's kind of the aim of this. And that's, you probably can't read it there, but that's just a screenshot of the metadata that goes with the presentation form, the archival form, and that's also on the website there. Okay, so some general limitations of this sort of task, and they're probably fairly obvious. One is the fragmentation of the task across space and time and people. So even though I've got a running tally of the time along the bottom there, and it seems like it's quite a short task. In fact, it's quite spread out across numbers of weeks or possibly months. And that can kind of give a lack of continuity in these sorts of things. So it is difficult working with multiple people and multiple aspects of the task, even though it seems like a very small thing. Lack of familiarity with the language is an obvious one, because we don't have enough knowledge about the morphology or the grammar or tones or whatever to be able to incorporate any of that into the word list. And obviously there's no grammatical information included in the word list, even if we knew it. The data are not naturalistic by any means, just the citation form in the recordings, and it's only based on one speaker. And also the data are collected from a diaspora community, which some people feel is a less valid sort of documentation. We don't really view this as a problem, because for people from South Sudan, the sociolinguistic situation there is far from homogenous anyway. They've often been refugees in various different countries before ending up in Australia or back home or wherever they are, and even if they have never left South Sudan, it's a highly multilingual area and there are very complex patterns of language use there, so there are likely to be influences of other languages from various parts of the world, regardless of where they're living. So it's a very complicated situation, and we don't think it is any less valid to collect the data from a diaspora community here. So why do we still think this is useful? Well, basically it's a first step for languages that have little existing documentation, and it's pretty useful for snatching opportunities as they exist, as they present themselves, because not all linguistic documentation or descriptive work can take place in the context of a long-term, highly funded project. We all know that can be difficult. It also produces highly comparable data, because there are so many existing Swadesh lists floating around for other languages, that it's a very easy way of making quick comparisons between languages that may or may not have similarities. It's very replicable, and because there are lots of languages related to Lopit spoken in Melbourne, many of them also very underdocumented, it's something that we'd like to apply to other related languages here. And it's also, because it's publicly available, it's a more immediate way of sharing your research output with the community, which is all in all a good thing. It's good for speakers to see that you're actually doing some stuff with the data you're collecting, and it's actually out there, you know, far sooner than it would be if you wait 3 years before producing anything that they can actually use. So even though it's a small thing, it's these little kind of things that have a lot of symbolic value for the community. And we'd argue also that even small preliminary type tasks like this should produce data that are high quality and very available and useful. For example, if you have very good recordings available like this, they can be used for phonetic analysis, and there's certainly a lack of publicly available databases that are any good for that. And obviously the techniques that are discussed here are pretty useful beyond word lists. Many linguists now include embedded audio in published papers where possible, or would like to more often, and making raw data available always lends validity to any study. So this is part of incorporating things together. If transcriptions are relying on audio, then put the audio in there. And as far as future work goes, we've definitely got more work planned on the word list with the data that we've already got, so doing a little bit of acoustic analysis to clarify some of our impressions of the vowels and the tones and things like that. So there's still more work to do, even just on this kind of simple task. And we'd also like to point out that small projects like this can have a snowball effect just by virtue of bringing attention to a language. So since this very preliminary documentation on Lopit, there's now a PhD in progress on Lopit phonetics and phonology. This last semester at the University of Melbourne, there was a field methods class held on Lopit, and there are other possible honours and master's theses projects happening in the near future, possibly. And we're also putting together a grant application to hopefully continue the documentation with a focus on training community members to participate in the documentation process. So those are our aims for now. And I think that's probably about it. Yeah. Thank you.